This is Steve Hurley, and welcome to the Pivotal Outdoors Podcast, discussing hunting, fishing, and outdoor pursuits, swapping stories and feeling alive. Today's podcast, I wanted to do some Q&A on items submitted by our listeners. First question, what is the price point of a Colorado elk hunt? So just to make you legal out there, you have to have a tag. So that is the bare bones required cost. And if you purchase an over-the-counter tag, the elk tag is $670.25. You have to also purchase a habitat stamp, which is $10.13. So that puts your tag total at $680.38. You can also apply for a limited entry unit, which may provide a higher quality hunt in terms of less hunting pressure and better potential for trophy animals. It's managed a little differently. When you apply for that, it costs a little extra. If you're not successful in the draw, you earn a preference point for that year. And Colorado is a preference point state, which means essentially, if you have the most points and you apply in the unit, you get chosen first. So let's just say it takes five points to draw a tag in a certain unit, and you apply and you have two, you didn't get it. The next year you're applying with 3 points. They go from, okay, everyone with 5 points, they get a tag. And they go down the list. If there's any leftover tags, everyone with 4 points gets a tag. And maybe one or two people with 3 points gets a tag. That's how the preference point system works for Colorado. So if you are applying in a limited entry unit in Colorado, you'll still have to pay the elk tag once you draw, which is $670.25. You have to buy a qualifying license, which is essentially a small game license, $82.78, just to apply. You have to pay the habitat stamp, $10.13, the application fee for species, which is $9 for a non-resident. And if you draw, that whole tag total comes out to $772.16. So that's bare bones just to be legal, $772. When you add another cost, such as transportation, I understand transportation can vary greatly. I was coming from Pennsylvania and I drove, and we drove 1,900 miles. My dad and I went and we split the cost of gas. There and back, that we had 9 fill-ups of the tank. So for us, it was about $648. We split that per person. It's $324. But if you're also traveling and say you go with 4 people, you split that 4 ways. $162 a person. It also helps if you do get an elk. Quartering and packing it out is a lot easier with 4 people than 1 or 2 people. Cost for food, I'd say you just kind of bring what you want. I know some people can live a whole week on a sack of rice and ramen. Other people like to buy a bunch of Berto beef jerky and spend, you know, a good amount of money on that. So that's a personal preference. I think you can prep ahead of time and dehydrate some meals, but that's kind of, you eat what you want to eat there. So I'm not going to really factor that into the cost. An additional gear like an Eastern hunter might not have would be game bags. I know some people have used like pillowcases. I don't know if I recommend that, but game bags, you can buy cheap ones or one-time use. And basically when you get your elk, to pack it out with your backpack, you got to quarter it up. It's such a large animal. So you quarter it up, take the back straps and whatever required meat you need to take. And so it could be 4 bags. That's why 4 guys would be great. You could pack out an elk in one trip if you're bold. So you can get the like one-time use cheap game bags on Amazon, or you can buy really nice game bags that are reusable, that have, they're stronger, they have like fluorescent taping on them. You could spend, you know, what you want on game bags. So I would just factor in about $20 and you could, or even less, and you can get game bags. So the bare bones cost, well, and then also lodging, a cost for lodging, I would say just camp. Either sleep in the truck, have a tent, go to a public land area that allows camping, and you don't even have to pay for it. Just camp. So to get there and be legal to do a hunt, you can do an over-the-counter with four people and you're driving. That's around $850. And this is me coming from Eastern Pennsylvania, almost New Jersey. So this is a pretty far drive. If you're from Texas, Kansas, Ohio, you're going to be spending less money on gas. So for me, Mid-Atlantic on the coast, over the counter with four people driving, it'd be around $850. If you do the limited entry and you go by yourself and you drive by yourself, $1,420.16. So you could do it for under $1,500. If you are successful in harvesting an animal, a hidden fee that you might want to do is taxidermy. So don't forget about that, but that's a fee some people don't mind paying depending on what you get. So you can do a Colorado elk hunt for $1,000. You just have to budget for it. And you think about all the money people spend on eating out or buying beer or getting lunch at Wawa every day. If you budget that out for a month and you see how much money you spend, even going to McDonald's, you go for the family of five, you can spend $40-$50 at McDonald's. It's crazy. So if you budget it and live slim, you can do an elk hunt every year. You can do an elk hunt for $1,000. All right. Question two. Did you consider a guided hunt instead of a do-it-yourself? I did consider it. Guided can be a good way to go, especially for finding, getting you on game, and handling logistics and meat care. Some states actually require a guide for certain instances. Some examples are in Wyoming, if you're a non-resident and you want to hunt in a designated wilderness area, you must be accompanied by a licensed Wyoming outfitter or a licensed Wyoming resident. So if you know somebody who lives in Wyoming, they can go and take this test. I believe it's free. It would be cheaper than going with a guide, but essentially you got to know someone in Wyoming. They go take this test to be certified as a guide, and then they can go with you, but you do have to be accompanied by a guide or a resident that passed the test. And then also Alaska is another example. They require a guide for brown bear, mountain goat, and dall sheep. So certain species are requiring guides. And a lot of people might think, oh, well, they're just trying to make money for the guides. Yeah, it helps their hunting industry in these states. But also there's some really important things that guides need to provide. One thing, if you're around brown bears and grizzlies, one thing could be safety, especially in Alaska, on having your camp and knowing to look for and tracking a bear if you wound one. So it's good. It can be good to have a guide besides just being required. Also, identification for mountain goats and dall sheep. Dall sheep, you're looking at the sheep and you're trying to determine the maturity based on curl. And if you don't know how to measure the curl and where it lines up on a full curl, or how many growth rings, you could be shooting a sheep that's not legal. Or for a mountain goat, if you're looking at a mountain goat and you're trying to judge a mountain goat, both sexes have horns. And correctly identifying a male billy could be a challenge for someone who doesn't stare at goats every day. Besides seeing evidence of sex between the legs, if you're from a distance and they're broadside, you got to look at the shape of their horns, how they're carrying themselves, size. It can be pretty challenging. It can be easy to mess up. And if you have a tag for a billy, you do not want to shoot a nanny. Especially if you shoot a nanny, you kind of take away all the little goats that nanny is going to have in her lifetime. It's already a very controlled hunt in number of tags, and you're trying to put more sheep on the mountain, more goats on the mountain. So you really got to follow the rules if you do get a tag. So it's a good thing. Alaska requires it for brown bear, mountain goat, and dall sheep, but I think it's a good thing. I would also imagine you can learn a great deal from a guide on how to conduct a hunt for a certain species that you're going for. If you're kind of new to it, go guided the first time or early on, and then maybe that can change your learning curve when you're getting into this type of thing. A guided hunt can also provide a new experience if it involves taking pack animals into the backcountry or putting out a spike camp or a wall tent. It'd be involving equipment that you probably don't have or might not have. And if you're taking, horses or mules, in the backcountry, or even llamas for some people, if you can just hire somebody to bring that out there, you can really go a lot further, get a lot deeper in the wilderness, and you can pack out an elk in a one shot instead of carrying it on your back. And it's something new going with horses. So a guide can provide this stuff. They also can provide advantages in obtaining a tag. So for an example would be New Mexico and Nevada. They have guided draws for these type of limited entry applications. And New Mexico allocates 10% of the tags for each species to applicants that are contracted with a New Mexico outfitter. And then 84% are allocated for residents. And then 6% are allocated for non-residents. So you can increase your odds if you go with a guide. And if you're planning on going with a guide anyway, you can enter that guide draw. Nevada also does it. They allocate a certain percentage of tags to their applicants that go with a Nevada guide. And there's also different services provided by guides. If you go fully guided, it could include the scouting for animals, meals, lodging. They could be shoulder to shoulder with you, like directing you or calling an animal while you're about to harvest one. Meat care, helping you break it down. So someone could be right there with you the whole way. That would be like a fully guided. You could also do a semi-guided, which they might provide like a drop camp or insert to a certain area, and then they'll come back for you. A good example would be my buddy Austin from Mission Alaska. He was in episode 1. He has a service where he's providing access by boat going up the Yukon, so he can get you in to where you got to go, and he can also help you get your moose out down the river. But you would be out there by yourself doing your own calling, hunting your game on your own. So other services could be scouting reports, or maybe not even a guide service, but you could hire a pack out service. So before you go to an area, you could call some guys up and be like, hey, I'm hunting in this area. I want to put you on retainer. If I get something this week, I need 3 or 4 people to help me come in, pack out this elk. So that's another. That is worth considering if you're just doing this by yourself. Reasons I wouldn't do it yourself. Number one is just to keep the price down. I'd rather do this more frequently than once in a lifetime or once every so many years. And then the second reason is all the planning and prep for the hunt is a big part of the fun for me. So looking at units, doing map study, playing the draws, trying to get in the tag, or going to the range, just all this prep and planning. It builds the excitement for the hunt for me. So I enjoy the whole process for it. All right. Question 3, how will you prepare differently for future Western hunts? Well, I will definitely plan out my food better. This past time I took old MREs that were expired just because I had them. But for flavor and cost, I would avoid MREs. They can be pricey. I know a lot of people take Mountain House, which is popular. I also hear Heather's Choice is really good. I would consider dehydrating my own meals. So meal prep and just dehydrate in the oven. So if anyone has some good recommendations on backpacking menus or food on doing it yourself, please let me know because I'm very interested. So that's one thing. I'm going to plan the food better. And also, depending on what the draw gods bless me with, my preparation will be dictated by what tag I can get. So if I draw an archery elk tag for September, I'll be heavily focusing on shooting my bow and focusing on calling, bugling, using a mouth diaphragm, and even studying up on when I do call an animal, depending on the response that I get for an elk, what's the next step? So doing a lot of personal research. And if anyone's ever heard of Elk 101 by Corey Jacobson, he has this course. It's very valuable. I would check it out. If I draw a tag in grizzly country, I'm going to brush up on bear safety and kind of how to minimize that risk on setting up your camp, the use of bear spray, what to do, how to encounter them, what to do. And if I draw a sheep or a goat tag, my focus will be on properly identifying legal rams and billies, kind of what we mentioned earlier, as well as shooting at distance and angles. So preparation that's constant year to year, I would say, for Western hunting is getting and staying in shape, shooting your weapon, and doing a lot of map study and scouting as much as possible. All right, and question 4, our last question. What is scrapple? I mentioned Scrapple in episode 4 when I was talking to my buddy Justin Lambert from Alabama. A good way to think of Scrapple is everything but the oink. It consists of all the scraps and trimmings of pork mixed with cornmeal. It's worked into a mush and then formed into a loaf. It could be liver, kidney, tongue, eyes, snout, whatever. It's just essentially all the pig scraps mashed into a loaf with cornmeal. So it's a popular breakfast food in Pennsylvania, as well as Maryland, Delaware, and New Jersey. And the history of Scrapple comes from German immigrants, and it's from a dish that was known as Panhas, which is like a pan hare or pan rabbit. It was originally made with buckwheat and other spices, but when these German immigrants came to America, mostly in the Mid-Atlantic area, the buckwheat was often replaced or supported by cornmeal, just because corn was plentiful here in the U.S. That's kind of how you get the modern-day Scrapple here in PA. So it's very popular in southeastern PA, and it's often associated with the Amish and Mennonite communities. So that's all I have for today, but please feel free to send in any questions you have, and I'll talk to you guys later.
Hey, thanks for listening today. If you enjoyed this podcast, be sure to like and subscribe. And if you'd like to support this podcast to sustain future episodes, feel free to click on the listener support link in the show notes. There'll be more content coming, and if there are any questions or comments, you can reach me on Instagram at Outdoors with Steve or at Pivotal Outdoors.